What's up, everybody? Welcome to another episode of Yala, your thrice weekly podcast, where we talk about the hottest news with a touch of what, Terrence?
Good old humor.
Good old humor, man.
Yeah.
Oh, today is one of those special episodes where it's not just two of us.
Yes. Fresh off the press.
Off the press. Because literally, we spoke about an issue where our guest today was kind of like quite central to it. Like two episodes ago.
Yeah,
it was episode
493. That's right.
The first one was Leong Man Wai issued Pofma. So
but it's not Leong Man Wai.
It's not Leong Man Wai. The second one was about PUB calling out Stera, a company that makes water purifiers in Singapore, for a misleading ad. Because there was a video that went viral. About a particular ad that Stera ran. And in that video, someone called them out, and now we have that someone in front of us.
Yeah.
So let me introduce him. He is none other than Clarence Sim, who goes by the handle Clarence Simple on social media. He is a PhD student at the Genomics and Ecology of Eukaryotes Lab, short form Geek Lab, at Nanyang Technological University's Asian School of the Environment. Welcome, Clarence.
Welcome. Thanks
so much for having me.
Yeah.
Sorry. Oh, no, it's no problem.
No, I mean, must have been quite a storm in a teacup in the last couple of days, last week or so.
Yeah.
Since you made that video on Stera.
2 weeks already.
Oh, two weeks. Wow. Okay. Mm. Is it how has it felt? How do you feel now about everything that's going on?
It's been quite crazy. Yeah. When I first posted, it started to go viral on my own account. Then I got a lot of DMs already. Then after that, when it went decently viral, then the news media started contacting me. And then they reposted my videos and it went even more viral. And then my DMs were just like flooded.
But with good things or
mostly good things, good things and thirsty things.
I mean, that was the part of the thing I was asking. It's like, I mean, when I came across your account, I was like, this guy is made for like social media.
Oh. Yeah.
You know, the thirst trap photos, the gym, the vein on the shoulder. The
is it okay if I laugh into the mic?
Of course, feel free, don't worry.
Okay. Yeah.
My thought was that, hey, this guy is totally made, you know, to blow up on social media. Smart, science educated, looks like Jungkook from BTS.
Thank you so much.
It seems almost like you've been setting up for this moment already, and then this moment came. But from what you're saying here, it sounds more like you were not expecting it.
Yeah, I was not expecting it.
Oh, really? Yeah.
But can I just say the irony of the thirsty messages that came, given that he was talking about water?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Fantastic. Wow.
Good pun. I thought, Terrence, you're going to latch on that. Thirst traps. But aside from the thirsty messages, what were other people DMing you about?
I think it's usually quite parallel to the comments you see. Basically, people thanking me for calling out these kind of companies for doing scare tactic ads.
Okay.
Yeah.
So maybe we talked about what happened after you released the video, but in the lead up to the video, right? What made you want to make the video in the first place?
Oh, everything happened very quickly. So I think it happened on 31st January night when I came across this ad on Facebook. Then, of course, I've done years of microbiology already and microscopy work. So the moment I saw the ad, right, my first reaction was just, wow, this is damn ridiculous. It's so fake to the point where I need to say something about it.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I decided to post on my own account as Instagram stories, because stories don't go viral, right?
Sure.
Then all my friends were replying, wow, you should do a video. You should do a video. Then I was like, okay, fine, I'll do a video. It just naturally blew up the next morning.
That same night. Oh, so that same night, you did put a story, your friends replied, you did the video.
No, actually. So I slept on it. So all my friends telling me to do it were that particular night. Then because I'm not inclined to do TikTok or Instagram reels. I'm not these kind of influencers. So I've never recorded a reel of myself talking before. So I was quite reluctant to do it first. Then somehow the next morning I woke up, I was like, okay, shit, I need to do it. I don't know why.
You don't know why.
Why do you think, or at least why was everyone egging you on to do something about it? Why do you think they were doing that? Why are they egging you on?
I think it comes from a few root reasons. I think generally people don't really, sorry, this a bit unfiltered, but I think people around me generally don't like Stara. Like, they are quite annoyed by their ads.
I see.
And how annoying and ridiculous their ads are.
Yeah.
In what way? Like annoying or ridiculous?
Are you talking about people around you, like scientists or?
No, everyone. Everyone. My social circle. Yeah.
What do they find annoying about it?
I don't really know how to say it. It's very hard selling. They will get all those like good looking influencers to hard sell this product.
Got it.
And they always appear on your ads, like to the point where it's very distracting and annoying. Yeah. So somehow everyone around me had very negative impression of this company. Same with Prism Plus, I think. Like they have quite a bad rep in terms of the way they advertise things. Yeah. I don't know how much trouble I'll get into for saying all this.
No, I mean, but I mean, I think I definitely, I told you this before the podcast, like, part of the reason why we really were interested to get you on here is because I think it's important that, you know, people, not just like authorities, but like the average citizen or person, if you see something that is egregiously wrong and misinformation and out to scare people of the everyday things, like the water you drink or that, I think it's important that, you know, you're able to and not scared of just coming forward and giving the setting the record straight, the facts and everything. And I think it's very brave to be able to do that, you know, in spite of what you know, like what you mentioned, where I get in trouble for that kind of thing. Because I think in Singapore, we generally have this non-confrontational attitude towards a lot of things. And a lot of companies get away with like really, really nasty tactics. So I was very heartened to see, there is someone, you know, who's not being paid by a government or some other company to do this, who is, you know, out of his own capacity choosing to do this. So I commend you that way.
Thank you so
way,
much. That's very, very kind words. Those are very kind words.
No. I mean, thank you for doing that. I mean, was that for you also?
Same thing. And I mean, like, you know, it's funny you say that you're saying that you had to sleep on it to decide. Because when I saw the video, I was like, hey, this guy is like a pro, man. You know,
That was my first ever really, time talking to a camera. I felt so unnatural.
Did you have to do it multiple times?
Yeah, I did it quite a few times. I was like, nah, this is too awkward.
But it looked like someone like a someone seasoned on social media. Like, you know, like making your point get across in like a short period of time with visuals in a way that is engaging also is not the easiest thing to do.
That was the very morning I learned that Instagram has a green screen function. Like, I'm that bad at social media. I was asking around like, hey, how do people do that? That
green screen.
Fake background thing and the green screen. And somebody showed me on the app like how to do it.
So after you edited the video, did you still have apprehension whether to post or not?
I was quite encouraged by how viral it went. So,
but this was you mean like for the actual video? What went viral? You mean the stories?
No, the actual reel.
Before you posted, before you hit.
Triggered me to?
No, as in like after you recorded yourself. You edited the video, put the green screen. Before you hit like publish, were you having second thoughts then?
Yes, actually. Because, I mean, if nobody... So I'm a bit of a scared paisei person. Never in my life I imagine myself talking to a camera and uploading it on social media. So I was quite scared that I would get a lot of judgment.
Is it?
Yeah, like people thinking, this is try hard, trying to be influencer.
Then you hit publish. Yeah. And like, do you immediately say, I'm not going to look at it the next hour or something?
Quite. Because I just published it and then I went to my office and then go about my day. Then the next thing I know, it had like 100 shares already. Like by lunchtime.
I see.
And I was like, it's doing so well.
Must have been quite exciting. Watching the numbers.
So before we take a step back, like your area of expertise, right? Like what even led you to go into studying like eukaryotes specifically? Microbiology.
So I never knew that I would end up as a scientist when I was young. So I did my degree in NUS. So I studied environmental studies in NUS, a bachelor's degree. I decided to not follow the standard path. I think this is an advice that I can give to people who are keen in pursuing a scientific career. So don't follow the standard path of, I mean, it's good, but there are other paths like mine where your year 2 undergrad summer or year three summer, everyone wants to do a 3-month internship. Mm. Everybody wants to boost their CV by doing internships at big companies.
Mm.
But I didn't do that. I went to find research opportunities. I went to look for grants. The thing is, I don't come from I come from a low income family, so I have to look for grants and opportunities quite hard. And then one came by. NUS decided to support me financially to go to Australia to study coral science. Like do a 3-month internship as a coral scientist intern. Yeah, so I was at University of Queensland. So that was my very first exposure to global science, like real science and research.
But there was competing offers for your time also, like were you thinking of also, oh, maybe I should apply for internship, job somewhere?
Yeah, because that's a very standard uni kid path, right? Like looking for internships at banks or some big engineering company or some oil company.
Yeah.
But did you like research?
Initially, I wasn't exposed to research, so I didn't know if I would like it. I just decided, I thought that it was an interesting choice, so I went for it first, see whether I like it.
Mm.
And then I was very inspired by the people who took me in. Shout out to University of Queensland. That team, they were very nice to me.
So when you say research on corals at University of Queensland, in my mind, it's like you're in the water a lot of the time and all.
Diving
and all that.
Sadly, no. It was all data. Like, they already have the data. So helping to process and analyze the data. Yeah.
I see.
And then in the end, a publication came out. So, like, something fruitful came out of that internship. So,
And then after that, like, to go on straight to pursuing a PhD, you know?
Oh, no, there are still a few steps. So that was my year two summer, right? Then my year three summer, I decided to, screw the standard uni kid path. I decided to do another research attachment. So this time I got another grant from NUS to support me to study in Japan. So I was attached to the Ryukyu's University. Let me say it right. University of the Ryukyus in Okinawa. So that was when I actually did all the diving and the lab work. It was also coral science.
Wow. Oh, okay.
Yeah, so also shout out to Ryukyus. That university, that team was very nice to me.
Then what's the next step?
Get like rescue diver license and finish my uni degree with a research honors. So like, you can choose to do a FYI, which means final year internship, or FYP, final year project. So with my past research experiences, right, it was quite clear to me that I should just do a FYP. So I researched on freshwater invertebrates. It means it's like those insects in freshwater reservoirs.
Okay.
Then with all these research experiences, I could directly pursue a PhD. After that,
And now your focus is like, what is your PhD on?
So now I study microbial ecology. In simple terms, it means I study very tiny microorganisms in the sea. I study their ecology, like how their population change with certain conditions, all that.
I see.
So I went from coral science to microscopic stuff. I was getting more and more interested in marine science in general. And then as I was doing research, the more I do, the more I realize like actually the tiniest stuff are the most interesting stuff.
And mostly focus on organisms in water.
Correct. And ice. So my two of my PhD projects involve the Arctic. So I study the Arctic phytoplankton spring bloom.
Oh shit. This is like
I don't know how deep I want to go to explain the project.
This is like the backstory of the arch nemesis of Stera. You know, it's like everything water. It's like, it's the backstory.
But I mean, it does, just going back to something you said earlier, like you said that you want uni students to understand, to understand your career path, to also see that there's another, there's other avenues besides the standard doing internship. Why has that sort of become your, why do you feel passionate about that?
I think that science and research is not very promoted in Singapore as a career option. I think the biggest, like as a standard Asian society, everybody wants to be like lawyers, I don't know, doctors. And now computer scientists, software engineers. But yeah, there's this option that you can do science, and not just science in Singapore, you can also do like science overseas or work on other things.
Yeah.
Is not based in Singapore.
Yeah. I mean, a lot of it is, even for us as well, we get that, a lot of questions from younger people about, if I want to pursue something other than the standard studies.
Yeah, a career in media.
Yeah, right? Career in media, all this, like, what do I need to do to get started and all? Like, for you, like, what is that kind of advice that you give to these students? Other than just like, oh, there are these options, like, what do you advise them to do to, say, pursue a similar career path as you have? Like?
I think, I wouldn't give them any, like, hard advice.
Okay.
I would just tell them that it took me quite a while to find my passion. Undergrad year 2 to year 3. Because before that, you were always here in JC, I want to be a doctor. Like, everyone is very sure what they want to do, you know. But I was like, let me just try something random, like an environmental science degree. And then who knew I would end up doing a PhD eventually. Yeah, so just don't be disappointed at yourself for not knowing what you don't want to do. For not knowing what you want to do in future. Because it will come at any time. Yeah.
But you know, you said like research and all is not promoted in Singapore. But you know, like in growing up in Singapore, maybe less so now, there's always this thing like, oh, we're only good at a few things. You know, why go into Singapore sports? Because Singapore sports, is there a future? But for research, sounds like you are very excited about research in Singapore.
I am.
But like, what is it that you know that like the layperson like me doesn't know about research in Singapore?
Okay. So thanks for bringing that up, because it's a very interesting point. You know how NTU and NUS always boast about global ranking? What we are global top 10 now, or like top 25 in the QS ranking. So all these are driven also by publications and scientific output. So, I mean, there is a whole list of criteria to rank universities across the world. But NUS and NTU have very good standing in the world now, largely because of research also. So, scientific research in Singapore is actually doing very well. I mean, it has been improving over the past, I would say, 1.5 decades or 2 decades. Yeah. Like, we are just climbing up all the time.
And what is fueling that?
I might get in trouble for saying this, but I think the standard, well, I don't know the whole university program, don't come for me. But we usually hire like experts from the world. So we hire like scientists and world-class professors from other countries. They will come in and like set up labs and teach the students. And that's why you see my school, we have a lot of foreigners. Asian School of Environment, at least. Like, most of the faculty are experts in their fields, but I think like 95% of them are not Singaporeans. So they come here and they share their knowledge, which is a really good thing. Then the next generation, I guess people in my generation can eventually fill these spots, these niches, because we already learn from them. Yeah.
And also, there is really that transmission of knowledge.
Which I think is a really good thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Is this kind of like the parallel is like you, like, Coldplay come to Singapore, do concerts, but the opening acts all local acts.
I really like that about Coldplay did.
I mean, you see that in a lot of what Singapore tries to do, right? We bring in foreign companies and hopefully something rubs off on them. But it's interesting to hear from inside the university what the perspective that, there are like very good professors coming here, and maybe we don't even hear about it, but they are being quoted in a lot of papers and everything. Okay. It's quite interesting. But so for you, like, with everything that's going on with Stera, I had like Harish, I had this impression that you were already very well versed and you kind of were styling yourself after the science communicator, like Neil deGrasse Tyson kind of thing, like, you know, come on podcast and talk for 2 hours about some obscure science.
No, I'm nowhere near that.
You mean that's not like a career path that you're thinking about or even thought about in the past? Or
no, because I don't know. Like, going back to the pay thing, like, I don't even know whether I can survive doing media or not. How much money I can make, all those. So, I mean, I already established myself to pursue an academic career.
Okay.
So, never have I thought that I would want to try doing, like, social media stuff.
But, I mean, it can be, like, even now, like, since that video, correct me if I'm wrong, you have been uploading more videos trying to educate the masses about stuff you care about.
Yeah.
So what was the motivation to do that?
It's just to show people that there are scientific perspectives to certain things. Yeah. Don't just read the news and then like, the water in Sembawang very dirty, but so what? Like,
oh, and your goal is not to eventually become a sterile ambassador or something.
No. Oh, talking about that, they actually reached out.
And
after very long.
Okay.
So they only reached out. So I published the reel on 1st of February, right?
Yeah.
Sorry if to the listeners if the conversation is going like everywhere.
That's what people listen to.
That's what we're here for. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So I published the reel on 1st of February. And they only contacted me on after the CNA broadcast. One really went very viral. On YouTube and on TV.
Yeah.
Even the boomers, like one of my aunt, she was watching CNA on TV. She was so excited, you know. She was texting in the family group like, oh my God, I saw Clarence on TV. I was like, oh, nobody watches TV now, but I guess my aunt does.
Uh-huh.
So that was how I knew that I was being broadcasted. Mm. Yeah. Through my aunt. Sorry, what was the question again?
Reaching out to you. Yeah.
So after the CNA, a few days later, so I think it was just 3 days ago, they reached out to me.
Okay.
Quite strangely.
Mm.
And what was the gist of it like, if you can share? Or you can't?
I can. I would show you the full DM, but best not to. I mean, they have some sort of privacy anyway. I have to respect that. They didn't apologize. They said, thank you for your video, for your expertise in plankton science and genomics. We would like to invite you to do a commercial with us to educate the public. Basically, they want to collab to redo a new ad. And then they also added that their ads are quite heavily pushed out on social media platforms.
Mm.
So it will reach a lot of people, like to entice me, I guess.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So they asked me whether I was keen or not. I didn't even have a second thought. Just like, no way. Their reputation is already so bad. They didn't apologize to the public anyway.
I mean, one of the discussion points we had on our podcast was that, rather than other than just exaggerations or, you know, saying something wrongly or what, it's almost like such an important resource, the cleanliness of our water, or at least just our water, right? Literally something that we drink every hour. Shouldn't something like that be, you know, more heavily censured or even to some extent even POFMA? And I'm sure I'm not the only one to say, I think a lot of people are saying if POFMA didn't come in, means it must be true, because that's what we're conditioned to understand Singapore, right? So in some way, I totally get where you're coming from, like where it's a hard no, because it's like, there needs to be this issue hasn't even been properly settled yet, and then they're trying to get you on the side and all that lah. So but did that ever cross your mind, like, you know, in the realm of social media, that you know, by going out there and calling out a brand or something might make you a less brand friendly influencer or anything like this?
Honestly, I don't care. I scientist first, academic first before social media stuff.
Wow.
Yeah. Mm. Wow. I think academia will always be my priority.
Real priority. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Respect.
But then, you know, like on the topic of even water filters in Singapore, right? I mean, we talked about it also from the perspective that PUB came out and said that, you know, our waters generally is safer than the levels imposed by even the WHO, right?
Mm.
So from what you know, from your expertise, is there even a need for filters in Singapore?
The short answer is no. Because with an extra layer of filtering, filters work. Like it's like a one-time use. You filter, like for example, you filter through a chicken soup, right? It will be clean once, but if you keep using that same filter, right, that filter will get very nasty. So imagine like tiny bits of bacteria always passing through that filter, and then it will just accumulate on that filter. So. I think CNA did a episode 2 years ago. Mm. It was led by Stephen Chia.
Yeah.
Like they engaged a lab to test like the amount of bacteria that came out of a normal tap water and a filtered tap water.
Mm-hmm.
Turns out that I think 4 out of 5 of their samples were in high concentrations of bacteria compared to the non-filtered one. Yeah. So
if someone were to suggest to your department or your school in NTU, hey guys, let's get a water filter, we all be like, or it's like blasphemous almost to talk about water filters.
I think some people buy water filters for different reasons, like to get rid of the chlorine smell and the taste.
I see.
Also, the taste still has a...
Yeah. I'm not anti... Oh, to clarify to the public, I'm not anti water purifiers.
Mm.
I'm just anti fake news.
I can go on a t-shirt, man. So you know about that fake news thing. What I know, you talked about certain things that you highlighted in the ad for Stera that made it very clear to you that is cannot be tap water.
Mm-hmm.
But what made you so convinced? Is it those two wiggly things that you highlighted that is almost impossible to be? Why is that impossible to be present in tap water?
Because firstly, I think the first word that everyone came across was diatom. I said there was a diatom shell, right? So that plankton, right, actually requires silica to grow, which can be found in like pond water or natural environments.
Mm.
Definitely, they cannot grow in tap water. There's not... The concentration of silica must be high enough for them to survive.
I see.
So that's a dead giveaway.
Yeah, sorry, that was very technical, but yeah.
Oh, no, that's sense. Helpful because, you sounded very convincing, and I remember you highlighted this and that, and yeah, like it seemed like you know your stuff. Mm-hmm. But just to understand, why was it so conclusive that it definitely cannot be tap water?
Yeah, it was this reason. So like, all these organisms will never grow or survive in tap water or even in the dark, because diatoms and nanoalgae, they all require sunlight to even reproduce and grow. So... Also your taps are all dark.
In a pipe is impossible.
Unless there's a broken pipe that is exposed to the light. So all these are clear no.
I see.
I feel educated.
Because all these, we call them planktons.
Yeah.
Specifically phytoplanktons. It means planktons that can photosynthesize.
Yeah.
Mm.
Yeah. So in the pipe, how can you photosynthesize in the pipe?
So whenever you travel, like, do you always, like, you always curious about, like, the water, different bodies of water you come across and all? Is that like something you do?
Yes, actually. Because I study plankton ecology, right, in the sea. So sometimes when I see certain things, I'll be like, oh, it's very likely this organism. But of course, I don't have a microscope with me all the time.
Mm.
But I'll be curious to like see what organisms there are inside. Yeah.
I see. Does our position in Southeast Asia, is it exciting for marine biodiversity? Because there's something as just a casual diver. I dive
Okay.
I always found that Southeast Asia has some of the craziest colors that I've ever seen diving.
Yes.
Or even the things that you see are so numerous and but you don't hear about it that much in
which is very sad, right?
Yeah,
because you know what? Southeast Asia is probably the best place to dive in the world.
Oh, really?
So...
why do you say that?
Because, people always... Okay, where there are corals, there will be a lot of diversity in everything, different kinds of organisms.
Yeah.
Because coral reefs are like a whole ecosystem, right, that supports different things.
Yeah.
Corals are tropical species. You will never find them in like Northern Europe. Or cold climates or whatever.
Yeah.
I mean, of course, you'll find them in like Central Americas, but come on, Southeast Asia is like super diverse. And there's this region called the Coral Triangle, which houses the most diverse and most abundant amount of corals in the world.
Mm-hmm.
It's situated in Southeast Asia.
Where is that?
I don't know exactly where, but it's a very big area covering like from Indonesia all the way up to Philippines. They call it the Coral Triangle. It's a very arbitrary like region.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Basically, Southeast Asia.
But is the area around Singapore also interesting? Because I used to dive recreationally also. But when you see blue waters, you can say Singapore is like water. You look, you're like, what is that?
You can't even see your hand.
Yeah, you can't see your hand. In my mind, I'm like, okay, this is boring as shit. But I know that's not the truth.
Yeah.
But visually, right, it's like, what? How is this exciting?
Mm. Well, if there are coral scientists listening, I think you'll be happy that I'm saying this.
They'll be all cringing at what I say.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, definitely.
Okay, I mean, first we have to acknowledge that Singapore waters have very low visibility.
Uh-huh.
I d- Should I bore your listeners with?
Yes, please. I've dived in Singapore waters. I also want to understand.
Yeah.
Okay, so the thing is, our coast, basically think of southern islands.
Yeah.
That's where all our coral reefs are.
Mm. Okay.
Southern islands, basically south of Sentosa and all that. There are like a lot of islands there.
Yeah.
It houses a lot of corals.
Yeah.
Before I move on to corals, I want to say why Singapore waters are so low visibility.
Oh, yes, please. Yeah.
Because our channels, the Singapore Strait is actually very shallow.
Yeah.
Like average from 20 to 70 meters.
Mm.
So there is constant mixing of sediments.
Yeah.
And also there's this concept called CDOM, colored dissolved organic matter, coming from surrounding regions.
Okay.
Basically, just think of it as runoff from the land.
Mm-hmm.
Like it darkens the water.
Sure.
So you have the colored water. That's why our water is quite greenish, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And then there's also a lot of, like, when you dive, you see a lot of sediments.
Yeah.
Because there's 24 hours of mixing, tidal mixing. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So these are the reasons.
The visibility.
So the sedum and the sedimentation makes the visibility like shit.
Okay. Yeah. Okay.
Well, I feel like the next time I go diving, I'm going to bring up CDOM.
Yeah.
The CDOM level was very high today, wasn't it?
Yo, yeah, anytime I'm a pass of a body water in Singapore, I'll be like, oh, you know why the water is like... Because everything I know is that the seawater is blue because of the light. Mm-hmm. You know, it reflects the sky or like the wavelength
not
of the water.
I mean, not entirely true.
Yeah, so then now I know CBOM, is it?
CDOM. C-D-O-M. Colored dissolved organic matter.
That's what the people I know will be talking, can tell the difference like that. CDOM, okay. So that is the thing about the look of it. Another thing that if you can debunk, please, you know, like when you dive in, like you go into waters in Singapore, you come out with like a bit of a layer. And then like, I've heard, you know, oh, it's the ship oil and all. But I'm like, is it? It can't be, right?
Like, it can be.
Oh, it can be. Oh, shit.
So, I wouldn't say I'm 100% certain that this slimy feeling is always oil, but there are times where I went out to do my regular sampling. So, I collect seawater samples quite regularly on a boat for my research. There are a few times where my equipments are stained with like black oil.
Oh.
So, it's quite clear that there are oil floating around.
Oh, shit.
Every time it stains, I'll be like, ah, oh, shit, like, have to wash again.
And it's damn hard to get the oil.
Yeah, it's very hard, very hard.
Wait, how, just on that, like, what is your day-to-day, do you have to, every week, you have to go and collect samples?
Every month.
Every month, okay. So it's like a one day, it's a one day thing, you go out?
Yeah, it's a one whole day thing. Yeah.
Okay.
But you go to parts where... Like where? Like Southern Islands? Or?
So I go to... My regular sampling sites are St. John's Island, Hantu Island, and Raffles Lighthouse.
I see.
Oh, shit.
I don't know whether you can access Raffles Lighthouse, but they have the nicest coral reefs there.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it's one of the further south islands.
Yeah, yeah.
I would say on good days, the visibility is like 4 to 6 meters.
Oh,
it's
really?
It's not the best, but it's great. Yeah.
But so, you can get access because you're a researcher.
Yeah.
But do you go out on a boat alone or there's other people?
No. Of course, there are
a
like,
whole team, like
a team. Yeah, a team of people.
So it's like once a month you charter a boat together.
Yeah, correct.
It's like how like boat. Like people charter yacht for F1 that kind of thing. Then everyone chip in together, put your bring
coral
alcohol.
Party. Yeah,
once a month coral party. Okay. So because I mean, like all the islands, I've visited them on boats, and the water there actually seems a lot clearer and calmer than like Sentosa and all that.
Because it's further out in the straits.
I see.
Yeah.
So your day-to-day, you also mentioned that you have to be in the office a lot. Is it like, what is your day-to-day like work like?
Oh, thanks for asking, because I think a lot of people don't know what a PhD student does. So at least for ecology, well, in earth sciences or ecology, we have to collect samples. So we always start off with like planning first. Then we go out to collect our samples. I mean, if you do forest ecology, you will visit the forest a lot.
Yeah.
If you study marine like me, you'll take the boat a lot.
Yeah.
So I'm out quite often. So after collecting samples, you have to go to the lab to process the samples.
Mm-hmm.
And then after that, more lab processing. Like for me, I do like DNA extraction, PCR to do like DNA stuff.
Whoa, PCR? That's like PTSD coming back.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Wait, what's PCR?
Polymerase chain reaction.
Sorry?
COVID test, what?
Oh, this is a COVID test.
The PCR test?
I don't know. I mean, I just call it COVID test.
You know, there's ART and PCR.
Oh, I forgot already.
Yeah. Okay, really
back
I can explain PCR after this.
Okay.
So I do all those lab work and then send for sequencing. Then when the data come back, I still need to be in my office to analyze the data. Like use R and use like modeling stuff or softwares to analyze the data so that I can do nice graphics and write a scientific publication out of it. Yeah, so that's why I would say my job is very interesting. You get to go out, you get to go to the lab, you get to be in the office.
But does it come with like any kind of hazards, like when you hang out with your friends, then you all go eat steamboat, then you're like, oh, this one, I know this organism, let me tell you about this organism, let me tell you about this water. Do you have that kind of thing?
I mean, if a group of nerds gather, then yes.
Yeah, but so a bit like going back to the second half of what you were saying just now, because it was about whether the area immediately around Singapore is very naturally diverse, right? So you set the context about why the color of the water is like that. Second part about
the corals.
Yeah, the corals. Yeah. And you said that all the coral researchers would be happy that you're going to say this.
Wow, hey, thanks for bringing us back. I find it very funny that there's no structure to this discussion. At least from academic point of view, like every time we discuss things, everything need to be laid out very clearly. So this is very funny to me.
This is a YouTuber.
In some way, just now, you know what he was saying about research? It's like last time when we went on the street, you know, same thing, we plan, you know, then we need to go research humans. Then we go do the interviews, then we come back and analyze the samples and make videos.
Editing is like what you all do with data. What's interesting, what's
and then
not
the final output.
But
sorry, what was the question?
About the area around Singapore corals being naturally diverse and the thing that you said coral researchers would be happy that you would say.
Yeah, yeah, because corals are mostly tropical species. So, and the diversity here is very huge.
You mean just immediately around Singapore?
The neighboring countries, yeah.
Ah, okay, okay.
So with diverse corals, you bring even more diverse like invertebrates or fishes or anything. So honestly, the best place to dive is in this region.
But around Singapore, like less so, or is it still very, very
exciting?
You
mean like Singapore waters?
Singapore waters.
Local researchers will be excited about this. Despite our low visibility, right, and nasty water, a lot of people call Singapore shit water. It houses very diverse corals and biodiversity. Yeah, very strange. Because somehow all these corals have adapted to these shitty conditions. I will not explain further because I will leave this to some coral scientists to explain.
But are these corals like that have these adaptations unique to Singapore or just other waters that also have similar kind of...
Well, I think you can be a scientist. That's a very good question. The answer is I don't know. I think some people who research on species diversity would know.
I know this might be totally unrelated, but a few months ago, you know, when that crocodile showed up at East Coast, were you surprised by that? Or like, you're like, yeah, of course, we see crocodiles all the time.
I don't think I can comment on that because I don't even know what species that crocodile is. Is it like some saltwater or freshwater?
I think it was saltwater.
Comments on that because I don't know anything.
The answer is yes, it's completely unrelated.
That's a very polite way of saying
it. Might as well be asking you about Mas Selamat crossing over Singapore Straits or something.
You don't often see runaway terrorists in the waters.
I still remember that incident. 2006, 2008.
Early 2000s.
I had to try.
You talk about the diversity in our waters and all that. So like, the last 20 minutes, half hour, you've sort of really shown, you know, there's this level of communication that you're able to do, right?
Oh,
and in terms of explaining concepts that even to lay persons like ours, very well. So it seems like that role of like communicating about science and all comes quite naturally to you. Why don't, if that can help you inspire more young people to pursue science. Like if you putting out one video causes three kids to think about maybe I should do science as a career. Why do you think that could possibly morph into your calling also, into like really thinking about communicating science as opposed to outright research? I mean, I'm not saying that you can't do both, but like what I'm asking is that do you think that this experience has made you more like maybe my calling could be in that direction?
I wouldn't say calling, but I would say more of like a hobby or like a hobby. Very interesting hobby. So I plan to use my platform to showcase different kinds of research, not just plankton or marine research. I already talked to some of my colleagues because I think I'm in quite a privileged position to know a lot of scientists in Singapore. So I have the network. I reached out to everyone and 100% of them said yes, they will be on my page.
Oh, oh wow.
So
like what do you plan to do with them? Like 10 types of eukaryotes?
No. So that's the thing. I don't want to go to it is that was a dig at Tan Jian Hao.
I don't say.
All the listicles.
Yeah, that's why. Right. 7 invertebrates.
I don't think I will go into that kind of like fun fact or tidbit kind. I really want people to listen to hardcore research but in a simplified way. I don't want to be like 10 interesting facts about Bukit Timah. I think we have those people filling those niches. But I don't mind if my audience is small and more niche. But as long as it can inspire one or two people.
What was your pitch to these researchers then, that you know, like you're doing some really interesting stuff, can I ask you some questions?
So I told them like, will you be keen on briefly sharing your research on my page, since now my page is getting some kind of attention? Then they were like yes, because scientists are actually given very little opportunities to communicate with the public. Our only way is through the media. Like if something big happens, then the media will contact us and like, hey, what are you researching on, can you explain this? You know, last in 2022 the sea, our sea glow up.
So
Mothership contacted me also. Mothership and Straits Times. So I was the one who explained like what was happening.
How come they contacted you?
It was like through connections. They were like, do you know anyone studying planktons? Then somebody redirected them to me.
But your face was not featured as much as this time, right?
Because this time I put out my face there.
Does it scare you that now, because you put your face out there, then you start getting all these thirst trap DMs and all that? Was that something that you have been, okay, this is going to happen, I'm going to start working out?
No, I've been working out for quite a while.
It's like, oh, okay, the plankton thing, maybe you got some media coverage coming up. You want to start working out.
Then like all his water sampling, he do sleeveless now.
Sleeveless in the yacht. It's just a coincidence, that's what you're saying, that you work out and this media coverage also happened.
I think it's quite entertaining.
It is.
The DMs and the comments.
And because of the way you've reacted to it also, even people like us, we can't tell that you don't enjoy it as much. Because it looks like you already know people are saying, oh, Jungkook, you know, this kind of thing. And you're already sort of reacting to these DMs. So it's like, oh, okay, this guy knows what he's doing. Dealing with social media very well.
Thank you. I'm new to this.
So just now you mentioned that like scientists get very little opportunity to talk. Is there almost like a demand to share what they or because you know there's that stereotype. There's a stereotype of YouTubers, there's a stereotype of whatever like athletes, there's a stereotype of scientists that they just want to do their research and all. Is that totally untrue?
I wouldn't say totally untrue. There are some scientists who do very good work and don't want the public to know what they are doing. It's too niche, it's too technical to the point where they're like, nah, there's no point trying to, for the lack of a better term, like dumb it down.
I see.
Dumb it down for, why would the public even need to know what chemicals I'm synthesizing or what materials I'm trying to create? I mean, unless it has like other reasons.
But at the other end, there are scientists who want to share but don't get the chance to?
Yeah, definitely.
And they've never thought about like going on social media or starting a podcast?
I mean,
I do see
a lot of, at least overseas, I do see a lot of scientific content creators, but it's very hard to get an audience because it's very difficult to balance between your research and making it and delivering it in a way that the public will be somewhat interested. If I imagine I just start talking about, I analyze the phenology of micro eukaryotes in the under ice Arctic spring bloom, like you literally don't know what I was saying, right? That will immediately shut everyone off if I throw in all these technical terms.
So when you see someone like Neil deGrasse Tyson, for example.
Sorry, actually, I don't know who that is.
Wow. Okay, so he's a science communicator. He's the, I think he heads up the planetarium in New York City or something like that. He's the director of the
He's
center.
An astrophysicist.
Don't come for me. Like.
No, no, so he's
I really don't know who
he's a big personality on social media. Mm. He calls himself that, scientist and science communicator. Mm. So most people actually know him for podcasting, for going on podcasts talking about science, for hosting, I think there's a Netflix show where, you know, he's in the style of Carl
Cosmos,
Sagan.
Cosmos,
yeah. Cosmos. Where he talks about, you know, interplanetary stuff and all. And he does, and so, yeah, in more recent years, because of social media and then doing things like debunking the science of space movies, for example, you know, he has become very popular. In fact, he came to Singapore last year for a sold out show.
Oh, is it?
Yeah, okay, just talk about his thing. And he hosts a podcast called Star Talk, which we enjoy. Mm. I mean, we've heard and we enjoyed it before.
Oh, nice.
So that's why I was like, oh, this is totally a career path for scientists and all. But for you, do you look at any of these science communicators and do you look up to any of them in particular or what? But obviously, Neil deGrasse Tyson, you don't, right?
I mean, I guess he's the most famous one, but no,
he's
I don't.
Quite famous, yeah.
Yeah, I'm not very. Sadly, I don't know a lot of science communicators.
Okay.
But I followed this. This was gonna be my one show thing, but
sure.
Oh yeah.
I follow this YouTube channel very closely called Journey to the Microcosmos.
Okay.
It's a very nerdy and very interesting channel. You know Hank Green?
Yeah.
Oh. Yeah, he's the narrator. So,
he's the narrator.
The footages are all like very high level, professional microscope videos of different organisms. Then they will explain the science behind it. Like how they will even explain like, oh, the ecology of this or like the evolution of, the evolution of certain organisms, how they come about. And then they'll show you very good footages. Wow, this is my kind of thing.
But is Hank Green's channel or?
Hank Green is the narrator.
Okay,
I think he's an editor or producer or something like that.
I mean, he's a big name in the YouTube scene.
Yeah.
I think this is the only channel that I subscribe to.
But like, does his face appear or he narrates?
No, it's purely like microscope videos. It's for the nerds. La.
I see.
Yeah.
But ever since this thing...
I buy their book also.
Oh, is it? But ever since this thing where you saw the power of social media and getting a message across, because I mean, be it like calling out a brand or doing this, ultimately you got a message across. Has it put some seeds in your head about, what would I want to do in future? Maybe can do something, not say... social media per se, but has it changed your perspective on science and what you do and what you are planning to do in research?
I wouldn't say it changed. It added on to my experience as a researcher, as an early career researcher. I thought my life was going to be like that, like pursue science and research, do a postdoctoral fellowship in some other country for a few years, then hopefully come back, become a professor, and then that's the end of my life. So right now I do see I'm starting to see that science communication is actually very interesting. Given that I have the freedom to do a lot of things on social media and that a lot of the public is quite interested in also. I'm surprised that people are interested in planktons. Especially since the bioluminescent glow thing.
I think maybe also because recently it was anchored in something that it's more relatable to people in the sense that plankton per se maybe it might be a bit of a stretch, but because this plankton is part of a broader discussion around a consumer product that was engaging in like somewhat false marketing, I think that's why people resonated. That's why it resonated with us.
And everyone was irritated by the ads also.
Can I say one thing? Thank you both for your very kind words for your the episode where you're talking about this, because y'all said really nice things. The choice of words were very funny also. Clarence Sim is the face of a resistance movement. Something like that. So it was quite entertaining.
We said it without knowing that you'd be coming on the podcast. For us, it's we just try to, we enjoy it when we see people standing up to
go, sorry yeah. so, oh sorry to cut you off You were saying that I didn't know, right? Yeah. I have a friend that is a very loyal listener to your podcast. Shout out to Jojo Jero. He listens to your podcast every time he commutes to work. He calls it like educational news podcast or something like that.
Okay.
Yeah.
No element of funny or entertainment inside. Huh?
Oh no, he said y'all are very genuine. Like, y'all use your natural accents lah.
Oh,
I don't know if that's a thing. But...
Actually, my natural accent is American lah. This is my Singlish put on accent.
This is your atas.
My choice to relate.
To come down to the rest of us.
Okay, so,
I think people like y'all for how authentic you are.
Thank you, man.
Views and your not faking anything lah. This whole recording is very natural to me.
Because literally the sequence of events was we did that podcast. Then we posted it on social media.
You
replied us on Instagram. Mm.
Yeah.
Then, Terrence said, you want to come on a podcast? You said yes. And within a week, here you are, man.
Yeah. But it's important because I think, there are, like what you said, there are Singaporeans doing very cool things, like research and other things that have impact around the world, right? Mm. You know, and I think we want to encourage more of that, right? Rather than just get on like influencers or football stars on a podcast. Mm-hmm. I think someone who's like, you know, doing other things that are also like initially might not sound so glamorous, but actually can be useful to everyone in your everyday life also. It's important. Mm. Right?
Thank you.
So are you on the path to debunking other like false advertising or misinformation?
If you're a brand, watch out. Clarence Chick.
He's coming for you.
That could be a t-shirt as well.
Is there anything else that's like on your plate too?
No lah. Right now, if any news comes along, then if there's a chance for me to explain certain things or debunk certain things, then I might. Mm. I think chances of me is higher now.
Okay.
But right now, I just want to focus on all the promises that I made to my colleagues to like interview them and share what kind of research they are doing. So this is really quite interesting.
In the form of like videos or longer form stuff? Or?
So the thing is, I'm not very good with social media. So I just recorded my first interview yesterday.
Oh, okay.
It's like a 4-minute interview. It can't fit in a reel. So now I don't know how to upload it. And I don't know how to edit it such that it's short and engaging.
That's but the format is what? Like you... Just,
I just ask questions, but and like then they reply.
Instagram reel, short phone.
It's like an interview, like a sit-down interview.
A sit-down.
Oh. Okay. So that's where maybe you need to consider TikTok, bro, because they can allow uploads of up to 10 minutes.
Oh, is it?
I
don't know. Probably not TikTok. I'm too tired for that. I would just focus on Instagram.
I was going to suggest that if you added some like angle to it, like working out with scientists or something like that.
Somebody DM me that suggestion. It's like a stranger.
Yeah. It makes a lot of sense. Your workout talk about science.
No, actually, why not?
Yeah.
But I'm not a sports scientist. Like, I don't know.
No, it doesn't matter. Because there's this thing, let's say, have you heard of Hot Ones?
No.
It's this viral YouTube series that became like the pinnacle of having interviews while doing something that as the time goes on, the guest becomes a little more disarmed. So what they do is they have 10 levels of spicy chicken wings.
Mm.
So it's very charming because you get big time celebrities like Shaquille O'Neal and like Paul Rudd. And so they eat the chicken wings.
Well, and then they let loose.
Let loose because they're sweating. Oh. So you imagine working out, right? By the 17th set, right? People are like fucking sweating and then you ask them, they just be honest.
Oh, this is very... Thanks for the suggestion, but I think I would say all my colleagues... I don't think any of my colleagues would be interested in that.
Then maybe just like... Then it'll be short episodes, 3 minutes, right? So you do one set.
How many sets can they do while answering all these 10 questions?
After 20 squats, they're telling you their childhood life stories already.
But interesting concept. I will consider.
But that's cool. So I mean, in terms of your, before we go to what you're planning to do, is there what's your favorite part of Singapore's biology or natural flora and fauna? Do you have something?
There's a very tough question because a lot of us is not natural anymore. So I guess a lot of research. Bukit Timah is still relatively primary and as in primary forest and untouched.
Mm-mm.
Untouched.
But do you have a favorite water body in Singapore?
No leh. Oh, no. PUB don't come for me. No.
No.
Yeah.
Well, you have a favorite water body?
Ah,
fresh water or like seawater?
Do I have a favorite water body? I think like as a reservoir, I think Seletar Reservoir is quite nice.
Mm-hmm. Mm. Apopius, very nice. Yeah, but more Apopius. To just walk around there.
Walk around. Like, I don't take samples of the water or anything.
Maybe Raffles Lighthouse. I think it's very beautiful. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, but I think a lot of people won't get to see cannot that access, in their life.
Why?
It's quite sad. I mean, it's very down south.
And we cannot. Is it a protected by nature thing?
I don't know. I think it's protected by military.
I've been in my youth, when I was young. Back then, you could go. I believe so.
I think with some permit.
Lazarus, I've been there.
Oh, yeah, Lazarus.
Very nice, yeah.
Oh, I see.
That one also, yeah, not everyone will experience it until eventually they build a bridge or something that gets there, which would ruin all the marine life as well.
Yeah.
Right?
But the bridge is going to be very long.
I
think it's like 5 km. 10 km south.
Oh, is it?
Wow. I think. I cannot remember. Yeah.
Oh. So like, is there a dream place in the world that you would love to work at and be based out of and study?
The Arctic. Because I've been quite deep into Arctic research already. The thing is, I personally did not go to the Arctic for my PhD chapters. So I was given the samples and the data.
Okay.
But I would love to be there to collect my own samples.
Why? Why?
I think it's a very interesting thing to study. Firstly, I really love microorganisms. Like, they are so tiny, but yet they have huge implications on ecosystems and earth systems. Specifically the Arctic, right? There are very little studies done there to study how the planktons are changing. Can I just bore or excite your listeners some science about plankton? Why plankton ecology is so important, right? Plankton literally produce half of the Earth's oxygen. You know, we always say the Amazon forest is the lungs of the Earth. Mm-hmm. You know what's the other freaking half? It's the ocean.
Is it?
Yeah. Because the ocean is full of microorganisms that photosynthesize.
Yeah.
And they are literally the base of the food web of most marine ecosystems. I mean, there are seagrasses and kelps, all that, but in the open waters and coastal waters, right, the base of the food web is plankton. So if plankton change, right, then the bigger things would change also. For example, small things eat smaller things, right? Big things eat smaller things, and then bigger things eat, like, it's a food chain. If you screw up the bottom part, right, everybody else will screw up also.
Yeah.
So there are very little studies on how the base of the food web is changing with climate change. So, you know, polar bear eat fish, and then fish eat krills, and then krills eat planktons.
Yeah.
So we don't know how the planktons are changing with climate change. So it will have this cascading effect.
So just to get an idea, like, plankton, how big is a plankton? Is a singular called plankton?
Correct. Okay. Plankton is singular and plural, strangely. Okay. I don't know the English behind
it's
it.
It's like sheep.
Oh, is it?
One sheep, two sheep.
Not sheeps, man.
I think it's sheep.
Oh, I don't know. I don't know. That's very interesting.
Sheep,
Anyway, they are very diverse in size.
Okay.
It range from like 1 micron to a large diatom would be like 200 micron.
And so, 1 micron is how big?
Micrometer. So 1 micrometer is 1/1,000 of a mm. Yeah.
Okay.
So you divide a mm into 1,000 pieces. That's the size of the plankton.
Holy shit. Wow.
Yeah, but that's like a small plankton.
Yeah. And the biggest plankton you say is 200 micron.
Actually 500 micron. Like, so half a mm. Yeah.
Oh, I see.
Actually that was the one that caused the glow in our waters. It's called Noctiluca. It's like really huge. Half a mm. I mean, to me it's huge lah. But 500 microns. You can see with your naked eye. So if you scoop water from the sea, right, during that glow period, you can see like all these green balls. That's how big they are. And those are single cell organisms. It's a unicellular organism.
And eukaryote essentially means what?
Wow. You sure you want to ask? It will bore the readers.
TLDR?
There are three main domains in life. Bacteria, archaea, and eukaryotes.
Okay.
So it's just a way that scientists classify things.
That's the three biggest categories.
Three biggest domains of life.
So we fall under?
Eukaryotes.
Oh, so we're eukaryotes also.
And that is part of the name of your lab as well, right? which is what again? Sorry,
genomics and ecology of eukaryotes. Yeah.
So it spells geek.
Yeah,
geek lab. Yeah.
Was that like a tongue in cheek? Like,
it was my boss came.
Can you imagine they unveil the building? They're like, fuck.
G E E K.
It's literally on the lab door. Genomics and ecology. Eukaryotes. Yeah. My boss came out with it. She's Brazilian. Yeah.
That's cool, man.
She's an amazing person. Like, I work very well with her.
I see.
Yeah. She inspired me to be a professor.
Oh, really?
Eventually. Yeah.
So when will you complete your doctorate?
I have to finish it this August and then defend my PhD before the year ends. Yeah.
So if we have you back next year, next time will be Dr. Clarence.
Next year. Yeah.
Oh, that's dope, man.
That's pretty crazy. But yeah, I think it's damn awesome that you're doing this. I think your passion in the research shines through.
Thank you.
I think that's why also getting voices like yours on, other than just because you're standing up to like filtration companies, I think it's just...
No, I'm not anti-filtration.
Sorry. You're standing up to like misinformation.
He spent 1 hour talking about this, you're just going to label him.
Standing up against misinformation, scientific misinformation. I think that is... super important, example for young people to also follow.
Thank you.
Cool, man. Yeah. So I mean, like, we've heard about your passion. Now we need to hear about your one shot thing. Which I mean, we can still give you a bit more time. We can go first.
Yeah.
And I also need like a few more seconds, so I'll just throw Terrence under the bus.
Sure.
Like, what's your one shot thing?
It's probably on my YouTube channel. Let me just pull it up, man.
See, even we need time sometimes.
Oh. Yeah, we need that, and it's completely understandable because.
Yeah, but I said already that mine is
okay.
Then the YouTube channel, the Hangreen YouTube channel. Oh, I should come up with another one.
If you have.
Mm-hmm. If you have.
Okay, I'll think about it.
I have one. Mine is there's been strangely also related to water. There's a made in Singapore video game that came out recently as a pirate video game called Skull and Bones. It was created by the Singapore office of Ubisoft, a very big video game company based out of France. Is it France? French, right? It's French. So they've been in Singapore for a while. And they just released the game Skull and Bones, which has been in development for the last, 7-8 years or something like that. But basically, from what I understand, is that they have a contract with Singapore they must release a made in Singapore game. And it's been a very turbulent story. Like, they had changed the director multiple times, announced a release date, delayed, announced release date, delayed, announced release date, delayed. But finally, I think like last week or last couple of weeks, the game has finally come out. I think there's a lot of backstory on it that has spans like almost a whole decade. So a lot of people don't know about this full story and how turbulent the whole thing was. But I think IGN did a very good like half hour documentary thing where they went through, all the ups and downs of this game. And it's just called The Turbulent Story of Skull and Bones. And it's interesting because it's based out of Singapore. It's a story about, you learn a little bit about the politics of video game
industry.
The
setting is in Singapore.
No. So the game is a pirate game. I won't say open world, but it's like you go around on a pirate ship and then you slowly build up your ship and your credibility and your crew. And it promised a lot of different elements at first, right, when they first announced it, but that they've changed or they've cut back and everything. So the game is not what was announced 7-8 years ago. So it's a lot of it delves into this documentary will delve into the politics inside the company, outside the company, the politics with the whole gaming industry as well. So I think anyone interested in games and the Singapore game industry, it's quite an interesting watch.
Cool. Nice. My one short thing is also a video, but it's the trailer for this upcoming film called Monkey Man. Have you all heard of it at all?
Yes.
Nope.
So it's something that came out, it's coming out in March, and it's an action thriller starring Dave Patel from the
Slumdog Millionaire
film.
Yeah.
He's the actor, he came out with a story and he also co-wrote the screenplay. And it essentially is set in India. And he's the premise is an anonymous young man working in an underground fight club sets out to exact revenge against a group of corrupt leaders who are responsible for his mother's death and also take advantage of the poor and powerless. So the trailer is quite captivating. It's also co-produced by Jordan Peele of, you know, like Get Out fame. And it's cool because Dave Patel, he doesn't strike you as an action star, but there's this grittiness to the trailer, and it's also set in India, so the visuals and the soundtrack, there's like Indian influence. So quite cool. I hope it's a movie that lives up to its promise. But yeah, the trailer's pretty dope. Have you seen the trailer?
No.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. It's pretty cool. So that's our One Shot things. Over to you, Clarence.
I don't know whether this fits within your theme of One Shot thing, but I came to realize that people on the internet can be nice also. As much as people are nasty. I mean, of course, with all this publicity recently, I got a few bad comments also. Like people criticizing me for my earrings.
For
being very aqua. But then a lot of people came to my defense. And a lot of people DM me, even strangers. They're like, hey, don't take it too hard. Like, honestly, I'm not offended. Like, I just find it very ridiculous that I'm talking about science and then all these people talk about my earrings.
Is there any comment on a video that even like our listeners can go and check out that you think is encapsulates how nice the internet can be?
I think in that video where I show that people call me aqua, I think some of the comments were really nice.
Oh, so on Instagram,
they're like, keep up with your style, I love your style. Like, more guys should wear earrings and
On Instagram,
on Instagram.
Okay.
Yeah, so I guess that's my shook thing. That
qualifies,
I realized
qualifies.
I always thought the internet was quite a scary place. That's why I was very reluctant to post anything in the first place.
Yeah.
I see. Cool. And if people did want to find you online, what's your handle? Where should they go and find you?
Oh, it's at Clarence Simple. So Clarence.
Yeah.
Simple. I only have Instagram.
For now,
I don't know what else.
Now.
Yeah.
For now.
For now, maybe forever. I'm quite reluctant to start. I feel like I don't have the energy to do
multiple.
I see. Yeah.
But yeah, cool, man.
Cool. But thanks for coming on.
No, thank you both for having me and for bringing it up in your previous podcast.
And shout out to Gerald.
Wow, he'll be very happy.
Solid. But yeah, thanks so much for coming. Thanks for listening and watching, everyone. Remember, follow our podcast wherever you're listening to us. And reach out if you have any questions or for us or for if they want to ask you questions, just go to your Instagram. Sweet. All right. Thanks for
listening,
everybody.
Thank you.
Okay. Bye-bye.